Good morning. Maybe I should scoot it over here. I wanted to put my camera so you could see the altar when I offered incense. So I'm here, kind of pitch hitting for Sosan. She's well, but she's recovering from the effects of the second vaccination for COVID-19. So I'm grateful that she could get that. And I'm also grateful to be here with you today. So I want to start with a land acknowledgement. And I also want to start by acknowledging that the land acknowledgement is just a start. And so I'm working to find ways to make this kind of acknowledgement more meaningful and to find ways to actually do something more active than just say these words. However, I think it's important to say these words. And I'm on the land of the historically of the Menominee tribes and the Oneida tribes. The Clouds and Waters on the land of the Dakotas. So that's where this came from. So I do offer this talk with deep gratitude to the ancestors of this land, the Menominee, Oneida, and Dakota peoples, whose descendants are still here. I also offer this talk with deep gratitude to our Indian, Chinese, and Japanese spiritual ancestors, including the Chinese and Japanese immigrants who first brought Buddhism to this country. May we and all beings find liberation together. So what I thought I might do was, this is my idea. So I come from the tradition of kind of 12 steps. And so what we do in 12 steps is talk about our experience, strength, and hope. And I think that really applies in this case as far as my experience, strength, and hope as it applies to Zazen or sitting meditation. Because there's a deep, deep emphasis in Soto Zen, the Soto Zen tradition on seated meditation. So I wanted to start with a quote from, I love this book. It's called The Wholehearted Way or the Bendawa. It's by Ahe Dogen, who is the founder of this particular type of Zen that we do, Soto Zen. I'm just going to read a little paragraph. Can y'all hear me okay? Yeah? Okay. And they're going to use the word samadhi, which typically is about, I equate samadhi with a deep liberation. For disporting oneself freely in this samadhi, practicing Zazen, or seated meditation, in an upright posture is the true gate. Although this dharma, this teaching, is abundantly inherent in each person, it is not manifest without practice. It is not attained without realization. When you let go, the dharma fills your hands. It is not within the boundary of one or many. When you try to speak, it fills your mouth. It is not limited to vertical or horizontal. Buddhas continuously dwell in and maintain this dharma, this teaching. Yet, no trace of this conceptualization remains. Living beings constantly function in and use this dharma, this teaching, yet it does not appear in their perception. So for me, in this teaching, I lost it right after the part where it said, right after the second sentence. I'm going to read that one again because I think that's really key. Although this dharma is abundantly inherent in each person, it is not manifested without practice. So I'm guessing you probably heard the saying that each one of us is a Buddha already. We just have to remember it, right? Well, how do I do that? So one of the big ways that we do it in Soto Zen is through sitting meditation. Clearly, like beginning, before this talk, we started with meditation. There's a long tradition of longer meditation retreats or sessions that I can totally vouch for. I love sitting zazen. I love and hate being in session. I do love it, but it's not without difficulty. So it's typically very challenging. So the way this came about was I knew that Sosan was getting her shot today. And so originally I thought I was going to share on a specific kind of meditation practice called Tonglen, which is about taking in the difficulties of other and sending out light. But as I was sitting there Friday morning, is the morning where I typically will lead the meditation. And so Zoom is a weird thing, you know, because I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, you know, like I'm sitting there and like, you know, part of the thing with being on Zoom is like everybody watches me being on Zoom. So I try to stay especially still, you know, like super upright. And one of the things that I learned or I kind of really, really practiced when I was at Zen Mountain Monastery was being really still. So I don't know if y'all, so for y'all that don't know, I spent, October, November, and December of 2020 in Zen Mountain Monastery, which is an awesome monastery, by the way. I highly recommend it. If you get to go hang out there, go do it. But they do an awful lot of sitting, and it was during practice period. So I just learned how to be, and they don't, I guess we do talk about it, but like they really encourage you to sit still. You know, like when people start to move in the Zendo, I mean, there is encouragement to sit still by, they have these people that are called, that are like hall monitors that will like, if there's something going on, I mean, they will encourage you to sit. So I got really good at sitting pretty still and then just dealing with whatever came in. So what this reminds me of, because it's sort of like, what's the point of sitting so still and torturing myself? Like, what's the point of working that hard at it? So I'm going to back up a minute. So the point is, I'll tell you, the point is it has afforded me some freedom from suffering. It's afforded me some ability to see the nature of what goes on in my mind, in my body, and to be able to be with myself with compassion, and then to really I feel like to heal. I feel like I really have been able to heal in so many ways I didn't expect to heal. I mean, I don't know anybody, I don't know about y'all, but I don't know anybody that came to Zen because everything was going great in their life. Like sometimes I sort of want to like, so what great tragedy brought you to Zen? No, it's not true for everybody. Some people are just born seekers and they're spiritually curious and maybe they just, I don't know what, they're more evolved than I am. I'll just say that. So I can speak for myself. I came to Zen because I was having some difficulty in my life, feeling like I was being the kind of the human being that I wanted to be. Okay, so let's back up. Back in 1998, I started teaching yoga, and I used to give these intro talks for yoga, and I would say, way back in the day, people did yoga so they could sit for long periods of time in meditation, and one of the people that came to the intro class said to me, why would they ever want to do that? Like, why would they ever want to sit for long periods of time in meditation? And for me, the answer to that is there's some freedom that I feel like I've gotten in sitting for long periods of time in meditation. What I know now that I didn't know in 1998 is that really the only way that I've been able to learn how to sit for long periods of time in meditation, you ready for it, is by sitting for long periods of time in meditation. That's the only way I've been able to do it. So I know some of y'all, I know some of y'all have been practicing longer than I am. And I have deep, deep respect for you. So I just want to offer these things to you in the spirit of helpfulness. If it's helpful for you, great. If you don't agree with it or it doesn't match with your experience, that's okay, because there are as many experiences of being in Zazen as there are people here. That's my opinion. So for me, the first kind of thing, you know, when sitting, like, so how do I sit? Like, how do I calm myself down? Like, so how do I actually do it when I'm on the cushion? you know, to like, because what, so the answer to that is I don't entirely do it. And then still, I remember back in, it was 2005, I went to like a long retreat in a different tradition. And I remember sitting and I was trying to get instructions from the yoga teacher on how to sit for meditation. Maybe I wasn't doing it right. And so I'm sitting and she's just like, look, you can't even sit still. I was just like, oh my God. I was just like, I felt shamed to death. So, like I said, I mean these suggestions as suggestions. This is what's kind of worked for me. So, because I was trying to think like, well, how do I do it? Mostly what I do is I just try to, so I'm kind of turning inside and looking right now just to see what comes up. So mostly what I do is I just try to be with what's here. I try to settle in. So I just want to invite you a minute. So just wherever you're sitting, just sit a minute and just feel your spine. Maybe then this is another thing. I kind of rock back and forth a little bit on my sacrum, you know, so I can feel it all the way up. It feels like, and then just lengthen all the way up. So try to lengthen up without being too stiff. So that's the trick, because most of the time in my life, I'm kind of all bent over things. You know, I'm kind of bent over the stuff I love, even stuff I love, you know, I'm bent over my musical instrument. So try to like lengthen all the way up, try to get really, really tall, and then try to settle into the sitting bones again. And then, this is the trick, try to relax. Now relax. So you want to keep this uprightness and then the relaxes. And then there's like the awareness. So sometimes, I'm so grateful, it doesn't happen so much now, but sometimes the only way that I can be present with myself is by sort of categorically going through my body. So I just go, I take a breath, so try this, take a breath, and then you maybe ask yourself, like, so what's going on with my toes? I do a little body scan. I take a breath, and I'm like, so what's going on with my feet? I take a breath, and I just go up the body, what's going on with my shins? Take a breath. What's going on with my knees? What's going on with my thighs? What do I feel in my hips? In my pelvis? I go up. What do I feel in my low belly and back? In my chest and heart, my upper back, my arms and hands, my neck and throat, and face. Typically, I hold quite a bit of tension in my face. Again, why don't you just settle in and just feel the rising and the falling of the breath in the body. See if you can feel your heart. Just allow the heart to soften just a little. Okay, so you can stay there or let that go as you wish. So one of the things that really drew me to Zazen in the Soto Zen tradition was the intensity of it, was the idea that, how do I say this in a way that's, I'm kind of a superhero if I can sit in Zazen, right? Super straight, super stiff, you know? And what I realized that even though I want to keep this uprightness, the key to being, for me, the thing that's made the most difference in my sitting has been opening to compassion, opening to sweetness, finding a way to not be so rigid with myself. So even though what really originally drew me to the Zazen was this thing like, I'm real tough because I can sit for long periods of time in meditation and look how cool I am. I'm exaggerating a little bit. It's not that far from the truth. What I really, really needed, but desperately sort of pushed against, was this tenderness, this compassion. So even though I might look like I'm like and trying to be all upright, because I am, I think there is something to be said for being upright and being still. What I'm doing inside, is softening. What I'm doing inside is being tender. What I'm doing inside is seeing how I can really be sensitive to the most difficult things to look at, the most naughty things from my past. I mean, so in the first time I read, somebody help me out with this. So there's a book, I forgot to look it up, but there's a book by, I believe her name is Tenshin Palma. She spent 12 years or 8 years in a cave. Anybody help me out? Anybody remember who this is? Nobody? Nobody remembers. All right. Nobody remembers. All right. So it was in reading her stuff that I first came across the idea that there are two parts to meditation. There are two parts, but this is the way she explained it. That the first part of meditation is just the calming down. That I'm just calming myself down. That I'm settling in. You know, usually I'm so used to like dashing, like going, running, working. You know, that like just to sit down. You know, one of my first experiences when I first sat down was I used to fall asleep a lot. I don't know if that happens to y'all, but I used to fall asleep. Somebody said, "Here it is, Tenzin Palma, a step away." There we go. Here we go. Oh, good. Hang on. I'm gonna look at it once. Here it is. Thank you. That's it. Okay, Tenzin Palmo, thank you, Myoshin. So, so I was close to her name. Anyway, so the first step is just to like settle down, to calm down, to like not be so freak. Like, I don't know if y'all know that. Some of y'all know me better than others, but I tend to be a little high strung. So, just being able to settle down. It was a huge thing. It was a really huge thing. And still, you know, I have trouble with it from time to time. So it's calm, like calm abiding. They call it samatha. And then clear seeing, vipassana. So if I calm down enough, and this is an analogy that's used a lot, but if you have a bunch of dirt stirred up in a glass of water, you can't see what's going on. But once that dirt kind of settles in, then I can see what's going on, or I can have a better idea of what's going on. So yesterday I had the great good fortune to hang out in the half day sit with Myoshin and a few other people. And it was really, really lovely. And again, like, why would you want to do this? I'm going to give you a little example from my life. So I came out of the half day sit and so then I came out, you know, to the rest of the world. I think it's lunchtime or something. And so my partner of 25 years said, hey, I realized I've been doing, so we live in an apartment. So I realized I've been doing the trash wrong. You know, like you're not supposed to put these particular things in the recycles. And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to have to start shredding so much stuff. I'm like, oh, it's terrible. And he's like, No, that's not right. And I thought, well, okay. But anyway, so often something like that will come up and I'll be like, well, yes, it is. I'll get all like opinionated about like what it is. It's really a stupid thing, but that's my go-to thing. So anyway, I didn't do any of that. I just was like, yeah, okay, well, maybe. And then he's like, well, let's go down right now and look at it together. And I'm like, I thought, you know, I'm in the middle of this. I'm like, and I just was like, yeah, no, I was just like, I don't know. you can go down if you want. And then he's like, oh, I'll take a picture of it. I'm like, that's a great idea. So anyway, so he went down, took a picture of it, came back up, showed it to me, or, you know, talked me through it. And I was like, oh, I was wrong. And so, I don't know if you're going to really get what I'm trying to say with this. The point is that all of that thing was like a not, it was no big deal. It was like an easy, like fluid conversation. It wasn't really like, I was just said, I think things are like this. He's like, no, I think they're like that. I'm like, well, okay, I think you're wrong, but okay. And then he's like, oh, you were wrong. I'm like, oh, okay. And then it was just like, just that whole kind of thing. I don't know, maybe your relationships are much more mature than mine are. But like often I'll find that we'll get into like an argument about something that's so stupid like that. So anyway, so I just accredited the fact that I was in that sort of like calm, sort of stable like place to like, with the fact that I just sat for like half the day. So I don't know if it's true or not. The other piece that I'll just say that I used to think that when I would see Zen people, specifically Zen people, I'd think they were kind of unemotional or not in touch with their feelings, or because they were like, well, I want to be non-reactive. And, you know, I just thought, and I'll just say from my own experience, I still feel my feelings. But it's just really nice not to get yanked around by having to be right all the time. So that's that. Let's see if there's another point I was going to make. Let me just double check. All right, so there's one more point, and then I want to read a poem. And then what I want to do, so this is the other idea I have. Then what I want to do is, when we get done with this, is that have some conversation about it, like listen and hear what you guys think or what's your experience. And if you want, we might split up into small groups. So the next piece of this is that Shohaku Okamura says often that, so this is to say, there's this idea, and Dogen Zenzi talks about this, about how you don't want to sit zazen for a certain reason, like to get something. Even though we want to be enlightened or get enlightenment, the whole act of sitting zazen, Shohaku Okamura talks about it, he has a whole video about good for nothing zazen, is that we sit zazen to sit zazen. I'll tell you that I probably wouldn't keep sitting if I didn't feel like the kinds of things I'm telling you, if I didn't feel like it brought me more joy or more balance or more steadiness in my life, I probably wouldn't keep doing it. But often when I sit, and I do sit every day, often when I sit, you know, I still think a lot. There's still a lot going on. I'm not in that awesome, settled place. I'm just kind of there, just sort of sticking with it. So what I found the most helpful is just, I keep coming up with ways to sit in zazen in a way that I can just allow myself to stay. I just try to like, I don't actually say that to myself. Sometimes I do, but just stay. Just when, like even Pema Chodron talks about, sometimes she'll sit on her cushion and want to run out of the room screaming. You know, like just find a way, and I guess I would, if there's any kind of however it works for you, my hope for you is that you can find a way to sit on your cushion or sit in your chair or sit in zazen, do seated meditation in a way that you can allow yourself to stay. All right, I want to read a Rumi poem because I love Rumi. Because I think there's a piece that transcends tradition and religion. You probably heard it before. I probably have even read it here before. So this is called Only Breath. Not Christian or Jew or Muslim, not Hindu, Buddhist, Sufi or Zen, not any religion or cultural system. I am not from the East or the West, not out of the ocean or up from the ground, not natural or ethereal, not composed of elements at all. I do not exist. Am not an entity in this world or the next. Did not descend from Adam and Eve or any origin story. My place is the placeless. A trace of the traceless. Neither body or soul. I belong to the beloved. Have seen the two worlds as one, and that one call to and no. First, last, outer, inner, only that, breath, breathing, human being. So I want to start by inviting, I'm going to put you on the spot, and you can say no if you want, Myoshin. But I want to just start by opening up to Myoshin. Myoshin and I have been teaching a Heart Sutra class together that has just been delightful. So I just want to see if there's anything you might have to add. And then I'd like to open it up to other people. Or should we take a vote and see if people want to stay or if they want to separate? Anyway, first I want to open it up to Myoshin.
Thank you very much, Dharma brother. I just want to briefly say, I think it's so important what you offered. When I was first coming up in Zen, nobody talked about what happened in Zazen. They just rang the bell and I had to figure it out. And it was really, really hard. I looked around, I thought, what's going on? What is this? And like, that's okay. But I really appreciate your honesty and your sharing. I think it can be, I found it helpful. I think it is really helpful. And I hope in our conversation here, we can kind of draw back the curtain a little bit. So it's not this like mysterious thing we have to kind of bomb into and suffer so much, but maybe we can find our way, like I said yesterday morning, to kind of ease and joy in our practice. You know, so we can really experience the fruits of Zazen, which is such a beautiful practice to take up. So thank you.
Thank you, Myoshin. Does anybody else want to feel like jumping in and saying anything? You can just unmute and talk if you want. Oh, Sosan says, hold on. Hello, Sosan asks, you said Tenzin Palmo said meditation has two parts. The first was calming down. What was the second? The second was seeing clearly, vipassana. So I think for me, like the seeing clearly part is the part where I can start to see how I get myself into trouble or what's really going on. Thank you, Sosan, for your question. Anybody else?
It's good. Just go ahead and jump in. I see Diane.
Okay.
But we can't, like, I can't see both screens.
Okay. I was just going to say what I've been doing lately is rather than that thing of staying, the word that I use is now. Not come back to now or, you know, what is now, but just that word now to kind of shock me back into the experience of the Zazen. That's been helpful to me now. Yeah. And also I heard something just a couple of days ago and having, you know, working with you all with the Heart Sutra, and it was a Zen kind of teacher in a meditation who said nothing becoming something while remaining nothing. And I was working with that in a meditation also. And somehow that was helpful. I don't even know yet, but, and he wasn't referring to the Heart Sutra, but you know, it's calling to me now because I've been looking at it and working with it. Nothing becoming something while remaining nothing. And it brings me back into that meditation mode. So that's about all I really have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Thank Ty, I want to thank you for using the word tenderness. This is, I think so often we get confused that we're supposed to force ourselves into a specific shape and just ride it out. And instead of having sitting zazen being an offering of ourselves and a taking care of. So thank you for the tenderness.
Thank you, Daishin. I think it's tricky. I think that zazen, you know, it's not just one thing. I mean, the one thing that's constant is the showing up on the cushion. What actually happens there, or my experience that happens there, continues to change and continues to change within the same period of sitting. Right? So I mean, there is, it's sometimes like I will, so it's not as though it's not difficult, and it's not as though then it's not staying or not, you know, like, and it kind of depends. Like sometimes, so when I was at the monastery, it was very difficult. I mean, there was a lot of times where I'm like, I was sitting there and, you know, sometimes I sat with physical pain. Sometimes I got a cushion. You know, sometimes I sat on a chair. I mean, so it's just that piece of like, how do I determine, like, am I torturing myself? Because that's stupid. Like, why would I torture myself? So I think that, you know, just finding that balance between I want to have this rigorous practice and for what, you know, to what aim, so that I can wake up. Well, sometimes I just thought, well, the thing I need to wake up to is I need to like sit on a chair. Like, this hurts. Like, I'm not getting, sometimes what happens if I sit with physical pain is sometimes I will get some insight, like it will be connected to something else or some historical thing. And sometimes I just need to sit on a chair. I mean, like, that's just the way it is. So that figuring out that is just, you know, that's an ongoing process for me. And I imagine that as I get older, that I will find more and more compassion for myself. Anybody else? I'm so grateful to be here with y'all. So, and I'm so grateful for this practice.
Hi, thank you for your talk. I just want to echo what Myoshin said about how a lot of times talking about zazen isn't something that happens. And so similarly, for a long time, I just kind of did it and hoped I was doing it right. And my only measuring stick for whether I was doing it right is whether I just kept doing it. That was the only thing at some point I just cared about, even though it didn't really feel right, or I didn't know if it was right. But I'm curious, you know, over the years, I've incorporated more than just sort of just sitting or bare sitting. You know, I've incorporated like body scans or body practices or compassion practices. And at different moments, some things feel more useful than others. And again, I just use the same measuring stick of, well, if I keep doing it or keep doing something, then that's basically good enough. But I'm just curious if you also use different practices or just sit.
Thank you for your question. Absolutely. I that's been kind of the curious thing to me. I forgot. Well, Sosan knows the answer to this, but I'll talk to you about what I do know. Yes, I do. So I started doing sitting meditation in like 1983 in a yogic tradition. And so in that yogic tradition, I used mantras kind of as a focal point. And then just ultimately, I felt like in that tradition, I was able to alter my state. Like I was basically, I'm a recovering addict. So I was able to get really high, but I wasn't able to translate that into the rest of my life, like be a decent human being. I mean, I wasn't a complete jerk, but I mean, I just wasn't, my anger still like ran my life way more than I wanted it to be. So that's what ultimately led me to Zen. And so what I did was at first, I just got rid of every, like I just not exactly threw away, but kind of got rid of everything I thought I knew about sitting meditation, because I thought, I just want to be completely open to this. And so, I read Dogen Zenzi, I read a lot of Dogen, I did a lot of sessions, I still do a lot of sessions, where I sat and I tried to just sit. And what I found was that I can't just sit. I mean, yesterday I kind of felt like in the half day sit that I was able to just sort of like be there. In the Fukan Zazengi, Dogen talks about letting go of body and mind, like it just lets go. I felt like, wow, this is happening, but I can't, that's not something I can make happen. So the short version to the short answer to your question is yes, absolutely. I use lots of compassion. I use lots of metta meditation, particularly metta meditation, which is the starting with myself and then moving in kind of circles out to the world. I use I've used lojong, which is lojong. I can't really. It comes from Tibetan tradition where you draw in like dark smoke and send out light to myself and then other people. So what I find is that so it's a little tricky because I try the things that I try to use now. I typically do kind of try to keep it in the Buddhist tradition, even though I guess I probably don't have to. I don't typically borrow things. Like, I don't typically borrow, well, that's not true either. Because I remember when I was at Zen Mountain Monastery and we were doing, the teacher suggested that I use they call the four immeasurables, which is may all beings be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May all beings know happiness and the root of happiness. May all beings live in sympathetic joy, rejoicing in the happiness of others. May all beings live in equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and delusion. And so anyway, the teacher suggested that I use this. And so I'm sitting there and I'm really frustrated and my body hurts. And I'm like, well, if we're going to use a mantra, I might as well use a mantra that I know works. So I use this mantra that so it was one of the things. I didn't have to keep using it very long, and then it brought me to this other place. So I guess I just use whatever whatever I can to be able to hang in there with myself. That's probably not a very official priestly answer, but that's the truth. Like I just use whatever I need to use whenever I need to use. And I think what I think has become true is that I have more tools in my toolbox. So when something comes up in my meditation, so if I find out that if I'm feeling really tender, I absolutely will use, compassion towards myself. I feel like I have more tools in my toolbox than I used to, and so then I have the ability to know, oh, when this is going on, this works, or when this, it's like that. So it's a little tricky because on one hand, they say, just sit. On the other hand, it's like, well, almost nobody can just sit. So I just sit when I can, and I use other tools that are needed when I need them. That was kind of a long answer, but thank you. Anybody else?
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Carla.
Hi, Ty. Thank you for your talk today. I'd like to point out, when I started sitting back in, when was it, 1996, I think. I sat quite a lot at the center and at home, and I did Dokusan. And, when we're working closely or even semi-closely with the teacher, it gives us a chance to check out what's going on with our mind. And believe me, it was really helpful at times when I was really going off into a, I was really going off in a wrong direction that wasn't bringing me
into balance and freedom. So although I'm not directly working with the teacher right now at this time in my life, it's really valuable to do that now and then. And even if that person isn't formally your teacher, even if it's with a Zen, you know, a fellow student, to just really talk it out rather than keep stuff in our head. And it's really valuable to do that. So at the times in my life I've done Dokusan, I'm really grateful for it. So thank you.
You know, I want to thank you so much for saying that. That is probably the thing that has made the biggest difference for me in this practice, is having an honest-to-goodness teacher, you know, that's kind of been on the path before and that can kind of mostly bear witness, but also, like, you know, just kind of like make little suggestions here or there. It does make an enormous difference. And that's how I got to Soto Zen, because I became aware I was sitting and I was sitting in a Zen, Zen kind of tradition in Appleton, and I realized that nobody in my area, I knew I wanted to like become a formal Buddhist student, but I couldn't find anybody around where I was. And so then I started looking, and because I knew that I needed a teacher, I knew that I needed insight, I knew that I couldn't do it by myself. And by the way, it's pretty rare for anybody to be able to do it by themselves. I think we all need each other. So I guess I want to say that too, you know, that the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, like as I'm looking at you all, I'm thinking, you know, how much I need you all, you know, how much I need like the Buddha, like the teacher or a teacher, how much I need the teachings, the Dharma, and how much I need the Sangha. How much I need you all, how vital you all are to like my ability to awaken, my ability to be on this path together. So I just want to send a big thank you out. Thank you, Carla. That was really good wisdom. Thank you. Yes, please.
Taizan, you brought up a really cool point, and I've been thinking a lot about Sangha. And in talking with my good friend Jake, we were noticing that there's a tendency to maybe think that Sangha is really great because Sangha helps me be better. And Sangha is for my individual kind of like benefit. And we're in such an individualistic society that it would make sense we see Sangha that way. And also something that Jake pointed out, we could look at Sangha as the only living presence of the three treasures. So Sangha is how we're going to experience Buddha and Dharma, which just kind of opened me up. So thank you for mentioning that, the three treasures.
Can you say more about that? I want you to say more about because I think that's a really key. I think I said that, and I think, ooh, that was a really great point. So you're talking about it's really easy to see Sangha as, oh, so that is a really self-centered view, isn't it? It's really great to see Sangha because it helps me. And so what would be the opposite of that?
I guess if we had more of a collective society or a collective culture, we would see ourselves as collective first, and then our individual is like, we strive for individual expression, but we already know that we have kind of collective connection. But I think our society is the other way. Like, I know who I am, and then, oh, they help me be who I am. But to balance it out a little bit more is to like kind of, maybe that's where our freedom is, actually, not only in our individual expression, but in understanding like how much we are actually only because of the Sangha in some way.
Yeah, no, I really love that. It's like the waves of the ocean, right? I mean, it's just like, hey, I'm this awesome wave. Yes, and I'm in the, you know, and I'm part of the ocean. I'm always part of the ocean. I'm never separate from the ocean, but I think I'm just this fabulous wave, right?
Can I just add something I've always been struck by? So some Buddhist traditions, you go off and meditate by yourself on a retreat, but in Soto Zen, we try to teach ourselves the truth of what you just said. So Sesshin is a collective. And when it's really clicking, there is no separation. Like, you get that. It's all together. That's why we do it all together. We sit it and we sit, we walk, we eat, we work, just like that. We don't all go off in our little individual bubbles. So thank you.
I wanted to let you know, Ty, that it's 20 after. If you want to take another question.
Maybe one more.
We could, but maybe we should wrap it up.
Or should we just wrap it up? Anybody have any burning desire sitting on, maybe not saying, going once, going twice? Okay, let's wrap it up.
Thank you, Ty. Thank you for an open and heartfelt Dharma talk today. We appreciate you.